15 to 20 million jobs.
Oh, I am your future.
Isn't it about time for a change?
We're our national leaders.
AmericanWorkersRadio.com. You're listening to American Workers Radio, a national network promoting American-made products with your host, Michael Blihash.
Well, welcome once again to another edition of American Workers Radio here on 860 AM. As you know, we serve the entire tri-state area, and you can listen from anywhere in the USA or around the world by going to AmericanWorkersRadio.com. As you know, after the program, we send out a rebroadcast, and that you can listen to 24 hours a day, 7 days a week, simply by going to AmericanWorkersRadio.com and click on the Listen Anytime link. Well, today we have a lot of things to discuss. I had an opportunity to meet with some of the people from the Small Business Expo, and some of the information that they told me was very interesting. I was really pleased about what they had to say. They gave me some ideas about restoring the clothing industry in the USA and what was really needed, and how people are trying. They're looking into many ways to open businesses, but they're very cautious in the process. As always, go to your telephone, invite family members and friends to tune in, because you're going to enjoy the company today of Mark Andel, founder of the Made in America store, Larkin Connolly, East Coast Vice President of SCORE, Rich Logis, the principal of RJL Technology Integration. Our engineer is Henry Chaplinsky, and I'm Michael Blihash. And you can see all those faces on the front page of AmericanWorkersRadio.com, and also click on the Listen Live link. Well, gentlemen, and all of the listeners, this has been a very interesting week. I had several events I attended, and I had an opportunity to talk to a lot of people. People are interested in doing something positive, but they're very, very cautious. There's a lot of great people trying to champion the cause of American Made, and I know that many of them are happy to see the changes that are happening. Others feel there must be more and faster actions if we're going to see those positive changes in our lifetime. Now, both groups are correct. So I'm asking all of you for both actions and also patience. Actions from our supporters by going out and really doing a job on some of the store owners and the managers, which, by the way, has been the biggest positive thing to happen to the country in many, many years. By letting the managers know you're spending your hard-earned dollars trying to support what is Made in America first, the American-made label first. Second, I'm asking for patience, because every one of you know our fort has been knocked down. In this case, I mean our fort. All of our industries were knocked down, and not by one of us, but by the leaders in the country, the business leaders, the elected leaders who just watched the businesses exit the country and had very little to say about it. Now, all of the people from the business expos and the business alliances and all, they're trying to recreate a framework to do something positive, and it's not that easy. It's like one of us going to an empty lot on a street and wondering how the new house is going to be when it's built, how we're going to be able to walk through the rooms where we're looking at an empty lot. And in many cases, we're looking at buildings that are empty. Many buildings were turned into condos and apartments. People were working in there for 20, 30, 40 years, and those buildings are now a place where they live. So all of this is taking time. In the city of Philadelphia, we have the many of the operations. We have Keystone Zones. We have the shipyard. All of those took 5, 6, 7 years to resurrect from being empty buildings into places where people are now working in big numbers. But it's important to stay together, take actions, and be patient. With that, I'm going to start off today with Larkin Connolly. How are you doing, Larkin, and what is happening in your neck of the woods?
Well, the clouds came out just as the radio show started, but it's still 73.
We got wind in Philly like it's going out of style.
Yeah, well, it's good tight weather. Good morning, everybody. Michael, my fellow panelists, Henry. It's a beautiful day in the neighborhood down here. Although I miss Philadelphia desperately, I sure do love the weather, and I sure do love my grandchildren, so I'm glad where I am. It's been an extremely interesting week for me also. There are a variety of things. I promised you I would, for every news program, every one of our programs, I would bring a fix, and we'll talk about that fix. But I first want to get my fellow panelists very, very annoyed, so that we can have a very vigorous conversation. And I will bring to light, in case nobody has heard about it, the rape case that happened in the state of Maryland last week, and how our wonderful Democratic Party has responded to this rape case. A 17 and an 18-year-old, both illegal aliens from Central America, raped, sodomized, and forced the young lady to have oral sex with them in the bathroom of a high school, where they had been admitted by the school district in Maryland as freshmen because they couldn't speak English. These two boys raped and sodomized this girl, and I have no report as to the condition that she's in since the last story that I read, which was that she was in pretty serious condition, both mentally and physically. You know, these things happen. They're two illegal aliens. As far as I'm concerned, I would tar and feather them before I heaved them back over the fence. Because, you know, you don't have to be an illegal alien. All you have to do is be a human being to understand how you just almost literally took the life of a young lady by doing this to her. And here's what our brothers in the state and sisters in the state of Maryland did. 4 days later, they started a legislative process to turn the state of Maryland into a sanctuary state, which would make it impossible for the federal government to get involved with the punishment of these two boys at 18 and 17 years old, neither one who speak English. Both of them, freshmen in a Maryland high school system. Come on, Rich. You got to get pissed. I'm sorry.
May I, Mark?
Go ahead, Richard.
Good morning. Good morning to everyone. Tim at the station, get the delay button ready. You better get both hands ready for this one. I saw it, Larkin. I did. You know... Let me try to focus my thoughts on this. I have said on this show, and I think for all of us in our day-to-day conversations, one of the things that I have said is if we try to go back and retroactively look at the last 8, 9, 10 years, the progressive culture that progressively got stronger and stronger and more influential is a culture that sides more with the criminals than with the victims. And this whole thing about sanctuary cities, which Miami made news recently because we have like a county city type structure down here. The municipal mayor of Miami-Dade told his law enforcement to follow the federal orders of ICE, Immigration and Customs Enforcement. So we made news for the right reasons. I just wish that one member of the mainstream media in an interview Democrat mainstream media. I know that's superfluous and redundant to say mainstream Democrat media. That's like saying very perfect. Mainstream media by its nature is Democrat. If you, I just wish that we'd had one member, Larkin, of the mainstream media in a big primetime visible interview. Ask President Obama. Ask Hillary Clinton. Ask Elizabeth Warren. Ask any of them. You know, how would you feel if someone who had been deported numerous times killed your son, killed your daughter? They don't live in that reality, Lark, because they live in a reality of tall walls, chauffeured cars, and armed bodyguards. They live in a world that is so detached from reality that when people who are so detached from reality outnumber the kind of rational thinking people at the polls, we just finished up 8 years of government that was chosen by people who live in a world of that's totally black and white. Let's get high, free stuff, hug a terrorist. Don't worry about borders. Don't worry about sovereignty. Everyone's great. Let's not call them illegal aliens. Let's call them undocumented. It is, and we are finishing it up. And we're watching now the residual effects of those 8 years of that government that was chosen by people who don't live in the same reality that all of us here and many of the people who listen to this show inhabit.
Well, you're now, right. All of you are right.
And that's the nicest way that I can say it, Larkin, without cursing and screaming and ranting and raving on this show when I see those stories.
And you know, guys, I have to tell you this, that this is the exact same reason, maybe not as brutal, that our workers have been overpowered by so many illegals over the years. They're taking our jobs, and there is no leadership at any level stopping it. Instead of
I will challenge you on that one. You know, this is where legal alien, not legal aliens, there's a difference between an alien who is somebody who swears allegiance to another country but lives here, and an immigrant. And we need legal immigrants.
Absolutely.
We need legal immigration in this country because these people, in what is called an economy that's built on experience, and these are the people who need to be doing these entry-level jobs that pay minimum wage so that they can grow inside that economy, so that they can start small businesses, get better jobs, get promoted, and become a part of the economy as it functions. But these people haven't stole jobs. They're at this point in their parties here in this country are really doing work that a lot of our citizens won't do. They just are. I mean, it's just a fact. We can't get around that. They really are doing work that a lot of our entry-level people won't do. They just flat won't do it. They'd rather get an entitlement of some sort than to lower themselves to working for $8 or $9 an hour. Why would I do that? Now, if we give that job, if an employer gives that job to a father or a mother of two or three children that's trying to support a family, shame on that guy. Shame on him for hiring somebody and putting them in that position.
Well, see,
that's not the intent of entry-level jobs.
Well, that's right, Larkin. But see, when you have this sub-economy of people just coming in, the person standing on the corner, you just pick them up in the morning and take them to the job. That's where the wages, that's where the laws are broken. We have to get our people, our American people, to speak up to the elected people to put an e-verify system of some type that we know who's on the payroll. Insurance companies who are insuring these work sites have to then say, we need to know who's on the job, who we're insuring. But because they're politicians, do not want to cause that type of aggravation. We see all of this continuing for years and years and years. If people were coming over from Mexico or anywhere else for years and years and found out that there were no jobs for them to take, many of them wouldn't want to come unless
Larkin, first off, I'm glad that you said that, because by saying what you said, by acknowledging that, and this would be an easy fix, okay, if the political will were there, we create a worker program for 6 or 12 months for those exact said jobs, Larkin, that the majority of people just don't want to do.
Rich, there's something to go into another country. In most cases, they want to know why you're coming, how long you're going to be. We don't have that in America. If someone shows up at a job site and they need the worker, you're just hired. If we had a better way of following all that, you were going to say something, Mark.
Yeah. How you doing, guys?
Good morning, Mark.
Hey, good to have you all on.
Morning, Mark.
So, Larkin, to your first comment, again, if that was my daughter raped by anyone, I'd issue the death penalty myself, I guess,
I thought to myself, if this happened to Mark Handel on that gorgeous little 14-year-old daughter he has, there is no place that guy could hide.
And on your comment with Rich, these people, where do they come? That's a young lady. You ruined their life. That's unacceptable. And what part of illegal immigrants don't they get? I'm getting tired of hearing that. But, on that case, hats off, Larkin, for bringing it up. On the, on the people not working and the immigrants that you guys are talking about, I just ran into a gentleman that he was working hard and he was working on a sink and he overheard these two people in the apartment building, and the one came in, the one was that owned the apartment building, was a worker, had two jobs trying to make ends meet, living week to week, and the other person came in and said, why you work so hard and, working's a waste of time. I make $27,000. On benefits, welfare, and whatnot, which actually ends up being $12.90 an hour. And his point was, why would you work? And I thought, this guy just had told me this yesterday, and what you guys are talking about, here, $27,000 you can get for sitting home, and that's a system. That's something that's broke. If somebody can possibly work, they should. They need the opportunity. But if our system gives them $27,000. To not do too much, there's definitely an issue that ties with what you guys are talking about. It works out that, and here's a guy working two jobs that was making less, and they might be smaller restaurant jobs, but the system's broken so many ways, but I think this is one of them. What's your thoughts on that?
I guarantee you, Mark, I guarantee that if you ask most people about sanctuary cities, that they probably heard of it the first time during this election cycle. I mean, I'm talking like people I know who are very well-read, very up on the news, and pretty independent thinking. They're autonomously, they can see both sides of an issue. They're not duped into believing whatever you want them to believe. And many of those people said, "Rich, I never knew what this sanctuary city even was." I said, "Yeah." Yeah, we got them. We've got them here. And I'm going to bring it right back to, Michael, my favorite political subject for as long as I will walk this earth, which God willing will be many years, is going to be about the electorate. It's going to be about the voters. When you stay home, you are influencing the outcome. Do you know what's going on around you? Michael, that's a fair question for people, because even with the election that just passed, I saw the final numbers are out. The turnout was higher than 2012, but it was still a lot lower than prior turnouts. It was lower than 2008. Why?
Well, I'll tell you why. I'm going to give you the answer.
You stayed home. But, Michael, what I'm trying to say is, look, fine, you don't like Trump. That's fine.
I have to clarify that, Rich. And I mentioned that once before, but in the last 10 years, we lost a lot of the great generation who were the great registered voters of every election. The fact that this election brought out as many people as it did is historic in itself. The fact that so many people went out and voted for the party that they're not registered for is historic again in itself. But
agreed,
during
Michael,
the last 10 years, we lost millions and millions of registered voters to age, death, and inability to vote anymore. So the people who registered, most of them, I have to tell you, are independents, went out and voted Republican this time because they wanted a major shakeup in America. But we lost the people. If the people that came and registered as a result of all the registration programs that were in this country in the last 2 or 3 years, and all of those that passed away had come out to vote, which of course they couldn't, but if they were still on earth and able to vote, you would have another 20 million people out there voting.
Michael, the numbers back you up with one part of our electorate. There are the exit polls and the data post-election has shown that there were millions of people who either had never voted, it was their first time voting, or they hadn't voted in many, many years. Okay, so those people came out, and those people predominantly came out for President Trump. Now, the flip side of my comment here, Larkin, is that the political parties, especially the Republican Party, see, this is where the Republican Party just keeps, this is where they keep losing the sales pitch part of this thing, okay? Because the Democrats, their votes come no matter what. The buyers for the Democratic Party are guaranteed. And I am telling you guys, the Republican Party right now, if Donald Trump does not run in this election, the conversation that we are having right now, March 22nd, 2017, at 11:22 a.m. Eastern Standard Time, is we are talking about President Clinton. Now, Mark, how does that make you feel? I am telling you guys, I am so sure of it, that the only person on that stage of the 17 who had a chance against Clinton was the guy who got elected. And I can sympathize that a lot of people came out to vote. They didn't like both choices, but they said, you know what? I'm a never Clinton person, or I can't side with the Democratic Party, what it's become. This is not the party of Scoop Jackson, John Kennedy. This is not the Reagan Democrat. These are people who don't have a place in their party, Michael. So the challenge for the Republican Party going forward is, are you going to keep putting out liberal whites who are just Democrats disguised as Republicans? Because if you're going to, you're going to keep losing. A funny thing happens when you run losers, they lose.
And you're right, Richard, but the Democrat and the Republican is wonderful. I'm looking also for an independent side of the thing, because the Democrats and the Republicans are just two horses running in a race. It's not going to work.
And
you
Mike,
need
like,
somebody to speak up and really speak up to put them, everybody, on the stage back again, talking about the real issues, the bread and butter issues of America. Yes, Mark.
Yeah, you know, I mean, as you know, with the Made in America, so I always said I'm with the American Party, and lately I've been using that more, and they said, what's that? Where's that? I said, well, I'm just for our country. It's not an our thing, do you think, union or non-union? And, you know, saying that, I've been asking people who they voted, why they voted, and Democrats that voted for Trump and different things, but I get the answer. They truly believe that Trump loves America and cares. He's for the American people, the middle class, the people that worked for a living, and he truly wants to save our country. And he stepped down and gave up his good life. The answers I'm getting later, just asking the question, who'd you vote for, why? They truly believe Mr. Donald Trump, our president, loves America and is sticking up for the working class and is going to make change. But again, they bring up, they don't realize how broke and how Washington never worked right and how difficult this task is. So I suggest to the listeners and everybody out there also to listen to the business owners, talk to, in a small store, ask the owner, is he available? Ask him how difficult it is, how costly, how labor-intensified, how much time he's with the family because he's got to work so hard. These working-class people that voted Donald Trump in and that work for a living, they need to be heard. Because when I say somebody's getting $27,000 for sitting at home, that's great. I'm not saying there's certain people that need that, but I'm saying, and Larkin, you ask for always answers, too. How can we fix that? Well, there should be a job program. There should be a limit on how long you can get that and a plan to get everybody working, correct?
Well, it goes back to the answer you know, I was asked to come up with an answer, an answer a week, and that goes back to my answer and my first answer, which is our education system is broken. And that is as close to the foundation of this country as you can possibly get.
And what's an answer to fix it, Larkin, though? I mean, we know, like, the skilled trade shortage, I'm seeing that day in, day out. Right now, it's hard to find these people. But how do we get right on it? We need quicker response.
You know? I'm laughing because I already know what Larkin's going to say. But I'm going to go on mute because I'm going to get ready to laugh on this one.
Okay, so you can laugh if you want to. But the first thing I would do, the very, very first thing I would do, would be button up, board up, and retire everybody that works for the United States Department of Education. It was founded
clean house.
It was founded in 1979 by Jimmy Carter. At that point, our country was number one in science, number like three in the arts and math, and now we're 36 and 41.
You're right, Larkin. I can't agree with you more. This guy destroyed what we had in the education system. And by the way, Larkin, what your people need to focus on in trades or whatever in Florida or California or Pennsylvania, it's every state is different. It should be up to the state and the State Board of Education to make mandate what they want and have to have in their state. If their state's an industrial state, you need industrial people. If you're a tourist state, then you need more tourism-type people.
So you're stealing my thunder. But that's okay. That's okay because you completely agree with me. We spent last year on the United States Department of Education for 4,400 employees. 4,400 employees. That we spent $5.8 billion. $5.8 billion.
I'm going to do the math for you, Larkin.
Only to see us hold our position in science and lose one more slot in math. So, look at the performance of the United States Department of Education from 1979 to today, and tell me that we're getting our $5.8 billion a year worth of money out of this. Somebody explain that to me. Somebody tell me that that's working. I would take that money. Well, why would I take the money? I would just cease taxing the states. I would return that money, and it's not actual cash or a check. Because you know, the Department of Education doesn't have a bank account of any sort; it just has a budget item. So I would see that those funds somehow get filtered back to the people who should be educating these children. And you know who they are? Their parents.
Well said.
Oh my God, Larkin.
Oh my God, this is unbelievable. Yes, and from the parents, you know, you could give a kid 1,000 great things during his time in school each day, but if he has nothing positive to go home to at night, that daytime is just daytime. And until you get the child back in the classroom the next day, you're a product of your environment.
There's no question, and repairing that environment overnight is not going to fix the life of those children. Because unfortunately, their parents are a product of that world. In 1979, they were being these, you know, the 30-year-olds and 40-year-olds who are parents today were brought up under that Department of Education folly that completely destroyed the educational system in this country. It showed an overwhelming amount of respect for teachers and the quick and radical formation of unions. You know what? If somebody's going to teach my child or my three children, now I'm going to send them to a school and I'm going to do my damnedest to be on the Board of Education. And I'm going to spend the money at that board on the people that I want educated. And I know that it's a product of property tax. That needs to be fixed.
so that there's more funding being put into education. We don't do anything more important in this country than educate our children.
Absolutely.
They are our future.
You know, so, you know, Larkin,
if you take a look at Upper Marion School District, not Upper Marion, but I can't think of it, but it's out in the main line of Philadelphia. There are like three teachers on that entire staff that don't have master's degrees. Three. And they pay their teachers well. And do you know what they get for it? They get 85% graduation rate. They get a 94% go to college rate or go on to advanced education. So, and it will only take my friend Bruce Bassapow, who was a neighbor of mine in that school district, it would only take us weeks to get a British-like education system where parents and well-educated counselors would decide that this individual would be happier with a hammer and a saw in his hand than he would with a pencil and an encyclopedia. So this is, and what an honorable job it is to build this world physically. I mean, and to build our country physically, and we've got to take that away. I mean, it's just all screwed up. And America looked at Washington, D.C. and said, you are wrong. You are facing in the wrong direction. You are doing the wrong things. And here's how wrong we think you are. We are going to elect a man who is a TV star, who has never been elected to anything, including a school position of secretary of his class in his entire life, and we're going to make him president over somebody who has served the public for her entire life. That's how annoyed this country is. And what is this country? The press and the Democrats, what are they talking about? Donald Trump. They're not talking about fixing one policy. They're not talking about responding to what the American voter said. They're just out there making a bunch of noise, hoping that if they make noise, everybody will concentrate on the messenger and not the message.
You see, Larkin, what you're saying right there, that's where it translates into what happens at the polls. Because the Democrats now, and I've said it before and I'm going to say it again, the National Democratic Party, they are not jockeying to win elections. They are not trying to win elections right now. Because if they were trying to win elections with all of their money and all of their resources, wouldn't there be a few people to say, you know, we got rejected in an unprecedented fashion. We were so bad that we have no one to measure how bad we were against. There's no one. There's no time in history, Larkin, for the current modern National Democratic Party to go back in history and say, "Well, they were worse. At least we weren't that bad." No, they're number one now. This is the first time in the history of America that the presidency, both houses of Congress, the majority of governorships, and the majority of state legislatures are Republican. All of the above. First time
all
ever.
One party.
That's how soundly they were rejected. People saw the Democrats coming. They didn't walk. They ran fast. And that's why it happened. So if they were actually trying to hone their sales pitch, improve the product offering, we'd be seeing a lot different things coming out of their mouths right now. But the fact that all this noise that you're talking – noise will get you a lot of votes. But then again, the Democrats get votes anyway. But that noise is not meant – to position themselves for 2018 or 2020. It's meant to just get the hysterical base even more riled up and more hysterical.
Somebody said to me the other day, how could it get any worse for the Democrats? And I said, you know what? You know what could be worse? In the midterm elections, now this isn't going to happen, but in the midterm elections and the next presidential election, when the Democrats turn around with their message to take a look at the public, and they've lost New York, Philadelphia, Detroit, L.A., Houston, Atlanta, Miami, all become Republican haunts. Can they lose more? Yes, they can. Are they going in that direction? Yes, they are. this country does not particularly care for the messenger. And that I understand, and anybody who doesn't understand, that's just hiding in the sand. But they like the message. And you better, Democrats, get on board with the message.
I want to tell you something. As you're speaking, I'm thinking to myself, I could give the Democratic Party a special focus that they should continue from now until the next election or for the next 10 years. Focus on what America needs and what would put America back to where it should be.
But Michael, they're based.
That's jobs.
Michael.
I know. I understand. Believe me, I'm going through a situation where people in government are trying to force me to do certain things that I don't want to do and I wouldn't do for our community. But they're still trying to see what they can do. If they could force their way to getting more industry leaders together, to make more enterprise zones where businesses could flourish. Until there is a member of Congress and governors all working together, along with the president himself, as one group, there's not going to be anything happening in this country until they have someone who is there to make sure that you have a person who's in charge of bringing in businesses to the country. I want to give you a few pieces of information from the latest Small Business Expo, where the people who were there were interested in investing and getting involved. Larkin, you were to it 2 years ago in Philadelphia. If you remember, we had it at the center. Well, people are very interested in doing it, but they're all also very worried now because the merchandisers have become very, very pushy from outside the USA. They're angry. First of all, Americans are concerned about money availability. They're concerned about rules and regs. Are they going to get some discounts from Washington? They're looking. Nobody wants to get off the racetrack. They want to wait for the bell until the bell actually rings. Now, here's the biggest thing that people are concerned with, and this has been going on for some time. Mark, you probably have seen it on your own. They say, we've tried to make new products in America in the last 3 or 5 years. We could put those products on the market on Monday for $1. By Friday, a new foreign merchandiser enters the market with an equal type product, selling it for 70 cents, just to knock me out of the ballpark. How are we going to help those people? Well, one of our messages is seek out the American-made label. Even if you have to pay those few extra pennies, dimes, support the American-made label. The people that want to go in business, the people that are going to SCORE, the people that are going to these expos and business meetings, and, you know, let's try to fix up these keystone zones. Keystone zones are places where they're going to allow businesses to open with a 10-year discount on their taxes. Someone in government has to ensure the new people that the price difference between what's happening with the foreign product coming in other words, for 70 cents, and the dollar that it costs for the American person to put that on the market is going to have a level playing field in the future. Whether that's a tax, a tariff, whatever you want to call it, you can't have people putting out their money, putting the product up, which sells at a dollar, and then all of a sudden, within weeks or months, new products are on the market from a foreign product manufacturer for 30 cents less on the dollar. There's no competition. They're killing us with our own needs. Yeah. You know yourself, there's nothing in America that you can buy. You can go into the stores. You have to hunt. You have to hunt for the products that you need. And by the way, I want to just bring this to Larkin's attention and Rich and all of our listeners. We had a very interesting group of people talking about opening up the clothing industry. And by the way, the clothing industry would be unbelievable to America, because everybody needs clothes, including our teams, our school teams, our major teams. But there's a problem that we have. They said, it's wonderful, but we need skilled workers. And I said, okay, if we're going to open up the clothing industry, what are the five most important people you need? Number one is sewing machine operators. Number two, industrial machine mechanics to fix the sewing machines when they go down. Number three, quality control people. Number four is truck drivers, shippers, people like that who are going to get the product to market. And number five is the salespeople to get the product on the street and push it so that it is competitive with the foreign-made stuff. Guess what? We have the people who could drive the trucks. We have the people who could sell. We're missing the sewing machine operators and the industrial machine mechanics.
Yeah. You know, well, Mike, you know, I thought of Wigwam Socks when you're saying that. And just to back up a little bit, in Larkin's education plan, which we're going to call it Larkin, we actually have to have a class on drive, ambition, and common sense to pull off most of what you've been talking about. So we got to start a new class. You know, Mike, what you're talking about with bringing back the clothing industry, and that's what Bob Chesbro goes through with Wigwam. You're right. These machines are involved. They need that mechanic. Again, the skilled trades is lacking. That's going to be a big problem. I'd like to stress to our listeners, Made in America is live and well. Probably one of the better years we're ever going to have. I'm going to hit 7 years April 3rd here going, which I can't believe. But, you know, we've got to stress it's springtime. Easter's coming. The sun's going to come out in Buffalo. We're going to have a 10-degree night tonight. I'm not sure what's going on with the weather here, but it's a perfect time to go out and buy American for Eastern and make a difference. Really turn it up on asking about Made in America products right now. That listener out there, you, the consumer, has all the power in the world. Whatever you say, you have to do what the customer says. So do all you can out there. Made in America is alive and well, and with this political environment, even Donald Trump saying buy American, hire American, it's making change, and people are looking for it. So
people are.
They really are.
They really are. And, you know, I have to say this to you, Larkin, you know this better than anybody. The ship-to-store concept has been so great for the people who are the importers, because they take it right off the ship from the container to the stores. The stores open it up, pack it on the shelves, and sell it to the people. For us to restore our businesses, we have to build up those industries, whether they're in existing buildings or whatever. This is taking more of our energy than we thought. The Business Expo people taught me a lot by telling me this is not going to be something you just turn the page and it's going to happen. It's going to take leadership at the very top of the country, someone who is going to be brutal in every way to speak up. But because there are people interested and they will come back, and they want to open in America, we have to push Washington. We have to encourage the president. I mean, no matter what the president says or does, his tweets and all, I can't do anything about that. But I can encourage him to start pushing American workers and industries.
So, I think we have to be careful because Mark has said there's only two vertical mills left in the country and blah, blah, blah. There's only two vertical mills left in the country for a reason. For more than one reason, let's put it that way. And the second reason is the vertical mills are an anchor. I mean, clothing in the world now is being made by robots. There aren't cutters anymore. There are machines that do the cutting. But those machines need operators. I'll make two points. Be careful who we're going to train and what we're going to train them to be. If we want to train them to run a sewing machine, we're going to have to send them to Bangladesh for a job. If we're going to train them to really get involved in the apparel business, then they're going to have to learn how to operate computers. They're going to have to learn how to change programs.
And Larkin, they're going to have to do a little bit of both, because I will tell you this, a particular band just got 200 jackets for sale, and they were all made in America. And I have to tell you, the jackets are beautiful. All the logos and all put on them. People made them, not machines.
There's no question.
Made them. And when you get those special orders, whether it's from a football team or a baseball team, they take people. Yes, those parts are cut out. Yes, the sleeves are cut out. The body.
The sewing is done by a human being.
So those jobs could be created. But after the product is sold, it's packed, and getting it to the store, getting the sales clerks to put it on the shelf, that it's American made, all of it takes jobs. Yes, it'll be less jobs than it would have been 25 years ago.
Tons of logistic jobs. I'm only saying that the face of manufacturing is changing. Now, I'm going to tell you something that might blow your mind. But this country has never had its manufacturing sector do more manufacturing in the history of the country, ever. We are at a high water mark we've never seen before in the manufacturing sector. Now, the big deal here is obviously inflation, and the automobile industry makes one fell swoop and it has huge effects on those numbers. But if you look at any chamber of commerce or any report, they're going to tell you manufacturing in this country is as high a yield as it has ever been in its history.
I agree. But there's one thing, Larkin, they're using a statistic that's two mirrors looking at each other. For the amount of people that we have in this country and the amount of products sold, we could really put another 25% manufacturing on the total that we have and be in a much better position. We've grown our population by 50 million people, yet we're looking at a statistic when we had 260 million people in America.
And yet
we're
now
to 325.
We don't make a toaster. Why, Larkin?
Well,
manufacturing, right? I'd have something that plugs in, or it takes a battery, so there's different areas, right? I always used to joke, they said we're building more rocket engines than ever. I said, geez, I don't got a lot of buddies working at the rocket engine plant.
Machinists.
That are buying rockets.
You know, by the way, the guys at the expo told me that the machinists make very good money. Very good money. And yet they can't find enough of them. Yeah. The guys are working 6-7 days a week trying to do emergency repairs. And many of them are not 25 or 35 years old. And yet there's nobody behind them.
Mike, to you and Larkin, you know, with the clothing industry, I had a lady come in that makes her total garment comes off of a machine. And a human never touches it. It's pretty neat. And she does high-end, different garments and whatnot. So it is doable. So Larkin and Mike, you're both right. And, you know, but Wigwam Socks still uses the old sew machines that it looks like grandmother on speed, you know, when they're running.
But so let me tell you
I
the amazing back. Reaction that this country would have if, in fact, we did create the facility to build clothing in this country, to build apparel. Do you have any idea the number of very, very talented artisans who are walking around with a garment idea in the back of their head that they would love to monetize, but they have no route for doing that unless they establish themselves with some Indian company or some Chinese company that can make their garment? That's the unfortunate part.
And we don't need thread and yarn, maybe. We're going to come up with new synthetics and different things. So it's all changing, but we want to be leading that technology.
I agree. And nobody in the automobile industry is going to trade school to learn how to weld.
No. It's such a problem.
They're going to trade schools
right now
to learn
it's
how
incredible.
To run robotics.
Yep.
And, you know,
I can back up, Michael Larkin, what you're saying. Because, the big 800-pound elephant in the room with manufacturing is always electronics. But when we look at other products, if we look at, for example, consumables, and I follow this very closely because many of these manufacturers are some of my clients. When we look at the broad swath of products called consumables, stuff that we use every single day all across the country. We're meeting the demand in the 90s of percentage of the demand is being met in the 90s for made in America products that are made here in those consumables. Even clothing, believe it or not, is on the up and up when it comes to manufacturing. Now, Larkin, you've said, and I think about this because you're absolutely right about this. I always tell people when they listen to the show that Larkin and Mark are the adults in the room, and I'm the wacko who escaped the political asylum. And Larkin is exactly right about the solutions part. Now, I don't know if the position I've taken, if I ever run for office, Michael, I don't know how politically sexy or tenable it is, but I say go after the $2 trillion. What's done is done. We can't turn back the clock and say we should have done this, should have done that. Tax law should have been this, should have been that.
That's right. I agree.
Right. I say show me the money. If you want to get it back, you want to make it sexy again, you want to go to these manufacturers, I don't care what they're making, Mark, and we go and say, look, this ain't no free lunch. I know the word free was used a lot this election, okay, which is a different issue. There's no free lunch. Did you get your free
bomber?
Get that money. Yeah, free everything. Okay, let's just have this. No. There is no free lunch. We'll get that. We'll wipe that tax, or we'll make it so tiny you won't even miss it. You won't even realize it's missing from the bank account. And let's go and get the $2 trillion. Let's go get it. And let's go tell those CEOs and those executives, let's have big press conferences in the Rose Garden. And this, you know, this company, XYZ, ABC, will say, we spoke with the president, we spoke with the cabinet, we've never been more excited about Made in America. You got to sell it and say, we're going to bring X amount of jobs back, we're committed to this date. And once they go public with it, Michael, it's a little bit hard to go back. We'll give you something if you give us something.
And that's guys, you know, being talked about the tax rate in New York, with federal and New York state tax and our franchise tax, I pay close to 40-45% total. If you took that to 15-20%, you're going to get businesses excited. They could do other things with this tax money, invest in technology, research and development. That's where you get that going again also.
And Mark, how many products right now in your store again?
7,000.
7,000. Okay, you start bringing back some of those guys. Now it goes to 10. Then it goes to 15. Now we're going to need a bigger boat.
You know, Rich, Play-Doh just announced they're going to be made in America this week. So Play-Doh, so guys, rest at ease. We can have our clay made in America.
Mark, you still have to make that contact with Fisher-Price.
Yeah, I want to follow through with that. This is going to we're going to get somebody on there.
Yeah, I want to tell you this, guys.
I can call them while I'm looking through the door there. And say,
talking about the Small Business Expo type events. Foreign merchandisers really don't want people like us to succeed, because if we succeed, they lose money and orders, and they don't like that. They want us to die on the vine. They want us to be divided. Forget about it. That's why they wanted the election to turn another direction, because they knew that everything would sit quietly. In fact, foreign merchandisers go to these types of expos to make themselves available to people who are talking about, well, I want to make coats, or I want to have it for the string bands or whatever. I'm going to make jackets. Why do that when I can get it for you for so-and-so, this much money, for $60 a jacket, and you can sell it for $200 a jacket, and you won't have any work, any aggravation. You give us the design, and it'll be delivered to your doorstep. These foreign merchandisers are panicking now because they do feel more businesses are on the way to give America a try again. And when you go out, ladies and gentlemen, and support the American-made label, when you go out and speak up in support of American, you are really doing more than you can believe. Because merchandisers can put a lot of stuff on the shelf, but if you're not buying it, the stuff is sitting there, and the store person who's selling it is not making any money.
Yeah, Mike. You know, buying Made in America is cool. You know, it supports entrepreneurs, inventors, doers,
you know, you got to – entrepreneurs have that don't quit gene, you know, which is hard to find, right, Larkin?
Absolutely.
Don't quit gene, and that's hard to find. We lost it. We need a cultural change. We need less entitlement. Seeing more and more entitlement, people just expect, and we created that. We've got to get rid of it. But buying Made in America is cool. It creates and causes a lot of things, and that's what we need constantly while we're thinking about and suggesting ideas what to do.
Yep. This has been a very interesting week. Larkin, how is everything at SCORE?
We're doing well. I will be with all of the chapter chairs and district directors in Norwalk, Connecticut next week. I'll miss the show, unfortunately, because Wednesday is the main day of the meeting. But, you know, we continue to battle the battle for encouraging people to exercise their entrepreneurial spirit, and we're out there trying to help existing companies like Mark's, advise them to, you know, get down to the neighborhood bank, forego those national banks. The neighborhood bank is dying to lend you money and be a part of your success, and I think Mark discovered that. And we, you know, we continue to do those small things that are very much appreciated in the community, and on top of all of it, we do it for free. So I thank you for asking. We're doing well.
And can I ask you for a little assignment, if you would? When you're speaking to the chapter leadership, would you ask them what exactly is the main, say, the top three types of businesses people are looking to go into? I'd be very interesting to know that. Maybe you can give us a report on that in 2 weeks.
And, Larkin, we'll let you skip one show. Don't be doing that 2-3 show thing again.
Now, Mark, I have a question. You mentioned that you were going to be interviewed last week. How did that go?
Well, the snowstorm in Buffalo, everybody was coming, but they couldn't get the equipment here, so we postponed it, but it's moving forward. Our 600th bus is this Monday, which is incredible, really. We never thought we'd have a bus, let alone 600. So our 600. So they're toying with the idea to come then, but they held strong, but we had a state of emergency, 62 counties for Wednesday, or Tuesday and Wednesday last week, so it was just a mess, and it ended up canceling that time.
Uh-huh.
We're moving it forward, Mike.
We had that event in Philadelphia, too, so I know exactly what you're talking about.
Yeah.
While Larkin and all that were laying on beaches, we were with shovels and sore backs.
We sent some wind down to Larkin, that's all, I think.
I think that might be
it. The wind comes from Washington.
Can I have a closing remark from Rich?
Yes, guys. My closing remark is to be continued. Show me the money.
Yes. And we're going to have to start really speaking up more about showing us that money. Let's bring that money back and get plans on the table from those investors, what they could do to restore some of our industries. Let's get our people back to work. We have to worry about Americans first. Yes, Dr. Larkin. We'll see.
Well, Donald Trump, the most amazing election a result in the history of this country, has been president for 9 weeks, and I'm not going to wait for 100 days to give you my assessment. I think the performance of the press has been deplorable, and the liberals deplorable, and I'm going to characterize his presidency as I love the message, most of it, about 90% of his message. I just think we need to clean up the messenger a little bit.
Okay. Mark.
Yeah, I just want to, you know, just push Made in America. Our wholesale's going well. We're opening One Niagara and whatnot, but you guys are great. This show's great. We got to believe, but I'm very important. Believing is the number one thing, and I know our panel does it. So thank you to you and our listeners out there, because we keep this moving, and that's a big thing.
Thank you, guys. And until this Saturday at 11 here on 860, or next Wednesday at 11 here on 860, I wish you and yours the very best. Make sure you go out and speak up about American, and make sure you buy American as often as possible. My very best. Have a great one.
Have a great week, guys.